You're listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Turning Hard Times to Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor, and I'm really pleased to have with me Charles Hugh Smith. He's been with me on the show a few times in the past, and it's really good to have him again. And I would suggest that you jot down the website or the blog site, I should say. It's charleshughsmith.blogspot.com, Charles Hugh Smith, H-U-G-H, Smith, blogspot.com. Charles Hugh Smith. blogspot.com. I'm having a little trouble getting tied up with my words here. But anyway, I really hope that people will take advantage of the wonderful work that Charles does. He writes really a lot of honest, straightforward commentary on what's going on in the world today. And I think we need more straight shooting instead of the kind of things things that are run through a sieve or run through a blocking system that, there's certain things that you're supposed to hear and certain things that you're not supposed to hear. Charles is the author and the proprietor of the popular blog spot, the blog of twominds.com. So that's what you need to go to. He's written several books as well, Why Everything is Falling Apart and Unconventional Guide to Investing in Troubled Times. Money and Work Unchanged. There's a lot of good work that he's done, and he does need some support, because he gets paid for the work voluntarily. He generously provides a lot of work, free stuff. So we're really pleased to have him with us today. But we really want you to consider supporting Charles and his work because I really think it's worthwhile. Thanks for joining me, Charles.
Thank you, Jay. It's always a pleasure.
You know, I'd like to really like to focus on a very troubling subject from my perspective. An article that you recently wrote, this is dated December 21st, Big Media Selling the Narrative and Crushing Dissent for Fun and Profit. So you started out your December 21st article with a statement that, and I quote, "The U.S. has entered an extremely dangerous time, and the danger has nothing to do with the COVID virus. Indeed, the danger long preceded the pandemic, which has served to highlight how far down the road to ruin we have come," end of quote. So I'd like to ask you, maybe you could talk about the dangers and about, how have they been in place long before COVID?
Right. Well, it's a great topic, Jay, and thank you for asking me to speak about it. And, of course, everybody that creates content on the Internet has experience or has heard from other people from their experience of what we call shadow banning or censorship. And this is what's so troubling is that these privately held corporations, right, these are private mm-hmm. sector corporations, Twitter, Google, Facebook, and so on, that they have the power now to censor those of us who post content on their sites. And this was a new development in American history, because if you go back to the beginnings of the Internet in the late 1990s or early 2000s, before the dominance of these platforms, it was kind of like the Wild West, right? Everybody, mm-hmm. You could post content and put out a blog and... And there was no censorship on these sites because there was no platform that controlled it. But now the major flow of content is now dominated by these platforms and by their other media kind of outlets. In other words, as you've discussed on your program, there's like six corporations control virtually all the media in the United States, right? Mm-hmm. From films to radio to the Internet. And so this is disturbing because we don't have any recourse. Mm-hmm. in our legal system, because as soon as you sign on to one of these platforms, you agree to their terms of use. And their terms of use say, we own whatever you've placed on our site, and we control, you know, everything about it, who gets to see it, who doesn't get to see it, and so on. And we're not obligated to share with you what we've banned or censored or shadow banned. And so that I think is extremely troubling, because you have no legal recourse. Whereas, like, let's say if your local government censored something, then you could go to the courts and say, I believe this is an infringement of my free speech rights, and then you'd have recourse, right? There'd be a court case, and but now it's like, who do you sue? You can't. They just tell you, well, you agreed to these terms of use, and so. You used, before we started recording, or before I came on the air, you mentioned the word fascism, mm-hmm. and that's a red button word, but it's as you described it to me, I think it might be appropriate for this kind of censorship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I in my definition, I think the Austrian School of Economics defined fascism as government and the private sector in bed together, controlling or working together for their own selfish interests, essentially. And so here's the thing, though, Charles, that newspapers, I believe, can be sued for defamation or whatever. And there's an awful lot of things on, let's say, Twitter and Facebook and places like that, where certain people are allowed to say very nasty things, and other people are not allowed to even speak the truth. And I've heard a lot of conservatives defending this notion of, you know, of what you just described with the private sector. Well, it's a private company, so they can do whatever they want. But we have this situation where there's so much power in the control in the hands of so few people that they can really filter out anything that is distasteful to them, right?
Right. And it's like... How do we make good judgments as a people in a democracy when the narrative is being managed by a handful of corporations, right? And that's really troubling, because if we don't get the full spectrum of opinion, then they're really managing our democracy, right? And so we could actually say that this sort of censorship and shadow banning is actually undermining democracy. Because if you don't get a full spectrum of opinion, then you can't really make reasonable assessments, right? You can't make a good decision if you've mm-hmm. been denied access to the information. And I think I want to make a point here. You know, it's very, as you well know, we live in a very polarized age, and so everything gets politicized. But a lot of this censorship has nothing to do with whether – you know, you are anti-Trump or pro-Trump or any of that kind of stuff. It's mm-hmm. like information about, like, say, COVID treatments or COVID sure. vaccines. And mm-hmm. so it's just simply like opinion or variations of information. And so that's what's disturbing, too, is it's not just like, well, we're banning hate speech. We're banning all kinds of speech.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I guess maybe the general public probably at first said, okay, well, we understand. You know, if you have hate speech, you have people that want to kill other people, and they say that on, you know, and I'm, you know, or threaten people. You know, it's understandable for a civilized society to say, well, maybe we shouldn't allow that to go on. But the idea that, for example, on treatments, for example, that the credible scientists have differed with the mainstream or with the CDC, for example, you know, very well known up until now, at least until this COVID thing came along, would have been highly respected. But the public has been deprived of the other side of the story. And so you have to think that somebody is calling the shots and deciding, you know, who do we want to hear and who do we not want to hear? Forget about the truth. Let's just, our truth. My truth is my truth and your truth is your truth, Charles. But, you know, there's no objective truth. It's like, it seems like we're not allowed to hear objective truth. So I think you make a very good point. How can we really have a democracy if we're not allowed to know what the truth is, or at least explore it? So You know, I'd like to ask you a little bit, maybe just define the shadow banning a little bit, how that works and how that affects people.
Right. I think that's a good topic because we see that term, but what exactly does it mean? And what it means is that if you have a YouTube channel and you post a YouTube video, YouTube could bring it down. They could notify you, we are taking this off, you know, the internet for this reason, right? And then you know you've been banned. Mm-hmm. But shadow banning is a little sneakier. What happens is Twitter, for example, in my experience, is you can go ahead and post a tweet, but you don't know that it's no longer visible to a huge percentage of your audience. And that if they try to retweet it, they're blocked. So in other words, it's like your tweet can't be distributed by other people. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. so Facebook's the same way. You can put a post on Facebook, but you have no idea who actually gets to see that. Because if you've been shadow banned, it's like you get to see it and maybe nobody else. Mm-hmm. And there's no way to know this. There's no disclosure required by these platforms. And if Google, you know, Google is also capable of shadow banning by deleting your ranking. In other words, you used to be on page one. Well, now you're on page 20.
Mm-hmm. Right? So no one's going to see you.
No. And how? Why did that happen? Do you have any recourse? Can you? Is there a court within Google that will hear your case? No. It's impossible to even get through to contact anybody in these platforms. So that's where shadow banning is so insidious. And I think you could even use the word toxic because the control of who gets to see things and who gets to follow your links or if you can retweet. And so I guess I should say that there are, in response to this, there are the growth of platforms that people are going to that are not dominant and therefore are more open, you know. Now, I don't know whether that's also hard to assess, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wonder. I mean, for example, Glenn Greenwald, who is, you know, more of a moderate Democrat, probably, or at least somebody who's not a mainstream Democrat since Snowden and the Snowden event and Julian Assange and some of those people. And I mean, what he has started his own show, and I think he's on a different platform. Do you know anything about that? And a way that maybe he is free of, or at least hopes he's free of some of these other censorships.
Right, right. I forget the name of the platform he's on. Might be Slack or another one. But and as you alluded to, when you very kindly asked your audience to support my work, you know what happens is also when your YouTube channel is shadow banned or deleted, then you lose the income that you used to get from mm-hmm. ads on that, and so they call it demonetization. In other words, mm-hmm. When your content gets pulled from the platform, you lose all the income stream that you had once had from ads and so on. And so now it's authors like Greenwald and people like me, we use like Patreon, or we go directly to the readers and say, please give us a dollar a month or something like that. Mm-hmm. And so that's a positive development because the readership can support the authors or the content creators directly. They don't have to go through. But it does require the sacrifice of taking your hard-earned money and giving it to content creators that you know admire or favor or believe mm-hmm. are creating value.
Mm-hmm. Well, but that's a free market. I mean,
yeah,
you pay,
that's right.
You get what you pay for. And if you want something for free, you're going to get a lot of things that other people are going to give that information for an ulterior motive that you may not be aware of. So I'm just wondering how this whole concentration of power in the hands of the few, you know, how did it come about? And I mean, I have some ideas about it. I think it has a lot to do with the monetary system and, you know, the creation of money out of nothing. And when the governments are involved, obviously people that are attached to government or to the feeding trough of the Federal Reserve are advantaged to those compared to those that aren't that close to the new money being created. But do you have any ideas? Because this concentration of power is something of both political parties, well, certain members of both political parties. I'm afraid that both political parties are probably slopping around with the rest of the pigs in the swamp. But do you think there's any chance that some of these things could be corrected? That, you know, we had the antitrust things that took place in the 1930s, and do you think there's any chance that we might there may be a political solution from the top down, or do you think that the people at the top are so much entwined in this sewage that nothing will be taken care of?
Jay, I think I did a great job encapsulating really the core issue going forward in terms of American democracy. And I think I totally agree with you, and we can just I'll try to speak to it very quickly. What you talked about, it's the financial system that created this concentration mm-hmm. of power. And the way it did it was huge corporations and financiers have basically unlimited access to cheap credit. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you and I want to go borrow, $300 million, we're not going to get it. But if you're a corporation, oh, well, the sky's the limit. You know, yeah. We can just float your bonds and we'll take a big cut, you know, meaning Goldman Sachs or mm-hmm. you know, one of the big Wall Street firms. And so if you have this kind of cheap credit, then it gives you the power to go out and buy up another media company. And so then that's how you only get six corporations own virtually all the media. And then the same thing with the banks, right? There used to be, and you've probably seen these charts or maybe directed your listeners to them, where there used to be like 40 or 50 large diversified banks. Mm-hmm. And now there's like five. Mm-hmm. And they've become so central to the financial system that now they're, quote, too big to fail, right? Mm-hmm. So now the government bails them out. And so, but it all starts with access to unlimited credit created by the Federal Reserve. And in terms of antitrust, I totally agree with you that we had successful antitrust in the early 1900s against, like, the oil, the Rockefeller Trust and mm-hmm. and other large concentrations of power. Now the question is, can we do that with big tech and big corporate power? And it was a little easier, I think, to say when it was oil or a commodity, you know, that you could say, okay, who controls the pricing and so on. Where, like with the platforms, it's new ground. You know, like the legal experts are really going to have to go through this and go, how do we break up or limit the power of these platforms? And so it's a challenge because, as you say, we don't want to say private companies don't have the right to do their business, in response to the market and so on. But we also have to realize that when those corporations own platforms and the media that then influence our democracy, they are in a different category than a company that's making semiconductor chips or distributing wheat or oil or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I just wonder if the people in the Senate, our senators and elected officials at the higher levels of government, are not so compromised that there just aren't enough of them that are in agreement with fixing the problem. I just wonder about that because obviously money seems to finance huge campaign expenditures. I think I heard down there in the one that's coming up, the runoffs down there in Georgia, that each of the Democrat candidates have raised $100 million. So this is big money, and the people that have power are just simply gaining more power. Of course, we have an economy that is, I think, on the brink of some very disastrous things, too. And I know that you write and cover a lot of those ideas as well. Maybe you would like to talk a little bit about your own shadow banning. How did you come to find out that you were being shadow banned?
Well, thanks for the question, Jay. What happened was it was in the run up to the 2016 election, mm-hmm. and I posted a few things. I'm not really a political writer. I'm more like finance, but I posted a few things questioning Hillary Clinton's campaign and certain issues that were present at that time. And then I got put on this list by some shadow company or organization which had no board of directors, nothing public. It was just like a shell. And it listed a bunch of us bloggers and people who'd written things that were against the narrative, which was that it was Hillary's basically crowning, you know, that she deserved the mm-hmm. presidency for whatever reason, and you shouldn't yeah. question that. Mm-hmm. Well, and so then we were all labeled as Russian propagandists or, you know, somehow influenced by Russia. And it was like with no evidence and no recourse, right? And so then the Washington Post, owned by Jeff Bezos of Amazon, published this front page story going, oh, well, here's a list of all the Russian propaganda sites. And then a few months later, I looked at my server traffic and it just collapsed like by a third. Hmm. And it was like overnight. In other words, like, and then I looked at like my links that used to come in from Google and Facebook, and then they plummeted from thousands to, you know, like a few hundred. And wow. So that's what happens. And so that's my direct experience. And I have a screenshot of my server where you can see it drops from, you know, X number of tens of thousands, you know, it just drops in half. And so, and that's how I know. And other people have similar experience. And I had readers telling me, hey, I can't retweet your posts.
Oh, yeah. So did you, how did you find out you were on that list? Was it published in the post?
Yes. They posted a big link I was on there.
Yeah. So you were one of those Russian connections, I guess, that Donald Trump was part of, right?
And they called this list Prop or Not, meaning like, is this propaganda or not? And they didn't accuse us of being on the payroll of Putin or something, but they just said we were like, you know, tools of Russian influence. And it was like, those of us who are not political, you know, we're mostly financial writers and stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it was just so offensive and so so stupid, you know, so absurd. And yet it was promoted by the big media corporations. And then what happens is when the Washington Post publishes something on its front page, everyone assumes it's legitimate. So then you've got the TV shows are saying, well, the Washington Post published this. And so it's like what they call circular referencing, right? Mm-hmm. Like, well, as long as one big media source says it's legitimate, then everybody else assumes that, and nobody did any digging. Like, where did these guys come from? Where did this list come from? What justification or evidence do they have to support this? And of course, there was none.
Yeah. Well, of course, if you pop up on the Washington Post, the New York Times, or one of those places, most people assume it's legit. And I guess at one time, maybe that was more true, but. But some of these major newspapers have had their issues. If people only knew the story that the New York Times suppressed about the Ukraine, and a recent movie just came out, I think it was Mr. Jones or something like that, a reporter, where Stalin was, essentially starving the people in Ukraine to get the wheat and to buy gold so he could do what he needed to do. That was a New York Times suppression, actually, that won a Pulitzer Prize. So these things happen, and these people are not the gods that they're made out to be, I'm afraid. So I just wonder, I mean, to what extent, I just hope somehow, now you talk about the possibility of the pendulum swinging back. Is that wishful thinking, or... You know, the pendulum does eventually swing back. It took 70 years, however, for the pendulum to swing in Russia, the Soviet Union. With all the misery and suffering and totalitarian control and poverty that resulted from a socialist communist system. Is that what we're looking at here?
Well, that's a great topic. And, of course, we're speculating. But what we can kind of, I think, guess or forecast is time is compressed now. You know, everything happens much faster now. And so, you know, entire industries, you know, are born in a few years and become dominant. And so it may be that the political sort of a glacier is speeding up as well. And I am hopeful that we've seen things like the anti-Wall Street movement, and mm-hmm. there have been these sort of populist movements, and it mm-hmm. may take something where somebody organizes a new political party, for example, and it and then suddenly they start winning elections. Mm-hmm. It may be something like that, where people just simply abandon the as you say, the swamp creatures.
Yeah.
And that hasn't happened yet, but I think it could happen. And if people feel like their interests are going to be served by a new party, much better than the existing parties, they will flock to it, and it could become a very powerful movement very quickly. So that's one possibility.
Mm-hmm. Well, we can only hope, and we can only hope that the votes are counted properly. There seems to be some question about that, at least not from Democrats so much as from some Republicans. I don't know what the truth is on that, but the point is that there is a lot of concern and seems to be some legitimate concern, but whatever. So I just wanted to mention also, you in your article, you talked about you have done a video with Gordon Long with about a minute left. Would you care to just talk about that?
Yeah, that was our attempt to shed some light on this concentration of power that you mentioned in the media and the consequences of that for our democracy. In other words, it's very destructive when all the power and money are held in the hands of a few. I mean, that's what we call neo-feudalism, right?
Mm-hmm,
and
sure.
Democracy is based on what Winston Churchill said, which is trust the people. And so you got to give the people free access to the information, and then you trust them to make good decisions.
We're
getting away from that.
Can you tell people where they could see that video? Is it still available?
Yeah, it hasn't been banned. And I guess the best way is to just go to my website, either the Blogspot one you mentioned or uptominds.com, and just scroll down to pick up that that link on the December 21st article.
Excellent. Well, I hope our listeners will do that and also follow your work on a regular basis, Charles, because it's excellent work. It's insightful, and it's not something you hear from everybody. You always have your own ideas of two minds, very, very worthwhile. So thank you so much for being with us, Charles, and I wish you all the best.
Thank you so much, Jay. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. All right, folks. Well, that is it for this week. Next week, Jim Rickards is with me to discuss his latest book titled The New Great Depression. Also joining me will be Michael Oliver, and I think we have a surprise company coming on as well next week. El Oral, I think, is going to be here, and Quentin Henning will be talking about that company's project in Bolivia, of all places. So until then, goodbye and God's blessings to you.
Thank you again for listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with Jay Taylor. Please join us again next Tuesday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
Novo Resources Corp. trades on the OTCQX under the symbol NSRPF and on the TSX Venture Exchange under the symbol NVO. Its flagship assets are located in the Pilbara region of Western Australia. Novo has recently partnered with Sumitomo Corporation of Japan to evaluate, advance, and develop the company's Australian gold projects. With over $40 million in cash and $60 million committed from Sumitomo, Novo is well on its way to establishing itself as one of the top junior explorers and developers in Australia.